If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
You've been listening to Get to Do It Again off of ALO's new EP, Creatures, Volume 1, Spark, out now on Brushfire Records. The EP features four great tracks by the ALO quartet of Zach Gill on keyboards and vocals, Dan Lebo Lebowitz on guitars and vocals, Steve Adams on bass and vocals, and Ezra Lipp on drums. Lipp has joined the band officially now as Dave Brogan departs for personal pursuits. We are big fans of ALO music and the band members. Getting to talk to them is like old home week, and we generally gel and laugh right out of the gate. So I decided to get Zach and Lebo on the line to talk about their plan for these new EPs and more. Our conversation started when I remarked that Get to Do It Again was a bouncy, fun tune, just what the people need in these not-so-fun times.
you know, people got to find their happiness where they can find it.
Yeah, right.
If a bouncy groove helps, then a bouncy groove is good medicine, you know.
It's the
Okay.
No, you go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, I was just gonna say I mean, I think part of the process with this album too, with or this EP that this song is coming from, is we just like had a whole, you know, bunch of tunes to just sort of kind of go through, and you know, maybe part is just like what bubbles to the top. You know what I mean?
It is the first track off of what is a series of EPs, Creatures Volume 1, Spark. So that makes sense. It does have a bit of a spark to it. When you guys decide to record music, is it finding the best vehicle for that music, whether it's creating a whole album or thinking about releasing music in phases as EPs? How does that process take place?
Well, we're sort of in a new, you know, we've been traditionally like an album every couple of years, you know, but we suddenly realized that we didn't have to do it that way anymore. I mean, that's just sort of the way we grew up, you know.
Right.
So with this, we thought, well, there's plenty of songs. Like, we could just release them in collections, you know, we could, you know, put them in compilations. We could, you know, it's just a way of getting music to people. As far as the process, you know, we all write a lot of music. So we,
right.
I think to speak to what Dan was saying is like, you know, when there's a song that's got a bouncy groove, sometimes everyone's like, I like that one. You know, and you're sort of like, it speaks to the, the time, because everybody's going through the times together, you know? So it's like, what are the things you're looking for in your entertainment, you know?
I wonder, you know, Zach, because you release solo material and you release material with ALO, and I think you're the only guy really in the band, although Ezra does have his solo project too. Is it a case of you bringing the guys a whole bunch of stuff, or do you know when you write music, Zach, that it's going to be something for ALO versus something that you might want to save for your own record?
I'm confused by that. I don't really know. Like, I tend to like just throw a lot of stuff at everybody, and the solo albums have tended to be more in times where like ALO wasn't going to be working too much for various reasons, and I just had a ton of songs that I kind of wanted to see get some love, you know. So that's sort of. But you know, I think ALO definitely gravitates towards things that have certain feels to them, but. You know, over the years, we've recorded a lot of different types of music. I feel like it's more just like if you get the four of us in a room, stuff will come out, you know. But,
yeah,
you know, really, we kind of know what a live show is like, so we know what to expect. I feel like it sounds like this, the album with the first album, where we were like, let's really think in terms of how these songs would all feel live.
Right.
As opposed to some, you know, before that we were... I don't know. Yeah, it was just different. Lebo?
Yeah, I was almost going to say, like, I feel like part of the thing with the music that ends up in ALO, in ALO's hands, is, like, it's almost like ALO, what's so different about ALO versus the solo projects that we all do is that, like, ALO, it's about our relationship. The you know, I mean, primarily it's been the three of us, me, Zach, and Steve, you know, and then with Brogan.
Right.
And now with Ezra. But it's like that's what ALO is the relationship. So it's like the tunes that are going to come out of that are going to be the ones that like come out of the relationship. You know what I mean? As opposed to like solo stuff where like, you know, maybe it resonates for you know, one or two people or something like that. But the stuff that's going to be on ALO is going to be stuff that resonates for all four of us in a way that like brings it out.
Right. The common ground stuff, you know.
Yeah, it almost seems like that's the thing, the driving force. So in a way, it makes it easy because it's just like, usually we have a pile of stuff, you know, like in this case, Zach wrote a couple tunes and I wrote one and Steve wrote one. And it was like we had this pile of tunes, but it you know, there were more. We knew we were going to just go to the studio and do four songs. We didn't necessarily know what they were going to be, but it was actually pretty painless in a way because it's just sort of like these four tunes just jumped out. Pretty quick. It didn't seem to, I don't know if Zach, you remember differently, but it didn't seem like there was much process involved with it. It just kind of happened. So So in a way,
the crazy thing was I actually did all my tracking remotely. I never actually
set foot
in the studio with the guys, which was sort of different. But I was there virtually, you know.
Yeah, by technology. Yeah, with this last one, we did a lot of remote stuff. We actually kind of did, whatever tunes were each of our tunes, we kind of got up and running on our own. And then went into the studio with Ezra. Zach wasn't there, but me and Steve and Ezra went into the studio and cut drums to them. So that was actually a totally different process than we've ever done before. And it was really fun. But I wouldn't say that's like the new path of ALO from here forward, because actually our next EP that we're already in the process of working on, we have studio time scheduled where we're all four going to be in there together and cut it more old school style, like all of us in the room, you know, building a song up. So,
but it was cool that, like, in the end, you know, in the end, I don't feel like I wasn't there. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly,
in the end, it still felt like an ALO album, like, even though I actually, like, wasn't physically there. But, you know, it's like I laid my parts down. I mean, it's like sometimes in the studio, it's like you're in your own ISO booth, like you could be in another country. the experience is kind of, could be, unless everyone's in the same room together. Yeah, it's different. But
I mean, it's not far from what we're doing right now. Like we're spread out around the fence. Here we are on a phone call, like doing something together.
We're improvising back and forth, you know, listening, call and response.
What we don't have is we don't have Dave Simon Baker and Mike Criswell to put it all together when we're done our parts, right? I mean,
we don't, but if we did, it would be slick.
You know what? I will say that Dave Simon Baker, especially in that, when we're doing that style, he functions at a very important role because we're all working on things individual, he's like the point person who everything's coming together to, and it kind of like, he definitely makes that process possible for us.
I don't know that I would have felt comfortable with doing it that way if it wasn't for him.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, because you sort of know, you could trust that, like, he knows what, you know, he knows, like, I knew that, there's a lot of trust involved in a situation like that, you know, where, like, I just kind of knew it would all be fine.
So is he the fifth Beatle at this point? I mean, is he that important to the recording process?
Maybe. But, you know, he's definitely become a trusted musical friend, you know.
I mean,
the process is like...
One at a time, one at a time.
What's that?
Zach, go ahead. You go first.
Well, all the different filters that, like, something goes through, you know, it's like, here's a song that, like, Zach or Lebo writes, and then, like, or, like, you know, like, you write a song, you show it to the guys, it alters, and then you bring it to Dave Simon Baker, and then that's a whole filter process, and it kind of sounds one way when it leaves there, and then you bring it to Mike Criswell, and it sounds differently, and then, you know, even when you get it to the mastering phase, it's kind of like, you know, with pottery, when you, like, you choose your color, but then when you, like, put it in the oven at a certain temperature, it's not exactly like what you thought it would be. So then part of the game is, like, learning how to, like, not overdo it too much here so that it kind of comes out a certain way in the final...
Right.
In the final mix, you know?
The only other thing I was going to add is that, you know, DSB has actually been the most consistent thing outside of, like, me, Steve, and Zach, our relationship, you know, like, he's been the most consistent thing for all our records, you know? It's like we've been at different studios, we've even had different drummers at this point, all these different things, you know, different times, like, all these things, but he's actually been the guy who's, like, and even us sometimes, like, we're all, like, in ALO mode, but we might be in our other projects modes too, so we're, like, you know, bouncing around the country doing this and that, and he's kind of the guy who's, like, really consistent with it all. It all kind of comes through him. He's an unsung hero,
a fifth Beatle, you know, for sure. He's definitely a big part of it.
Yeah.
When you guys...
We went to college with him, too. We've known him a long time. Yeah,
right.
He goes way back with us.
When you guys finally hear his work, I mean, you're obviously aware of what other people's parts are probably going to sound like. when you hear the final mix or even a rough mix, is it close to what you thought it would be, or is there more work that you have to do once you hear your part with everybody else's?
I would say that's a song-by-song basis, because it goes both extremes and often somewhere in the middle. You know, like, there's definitely times where, like, we're just laying it down and we already kind of know what the track's going to sound like. It pretty much sounds exactly how it's going to sound, just a little finesse here and there, you know. And then there's other times where, yeah, you're working on something and you're like, I don't know, this is weird, or this is sounding like it's going to go this way, and then suddenly you get it back and it's gone a totally other direction too. So,
well, at some point we started working, like, we used to kind of mix internally, you know, like, where we'd kind of mix as we went. Mm-hmm. And then I think starting in with Sounds Like This, we brought it to, like, Mike Creswell to mix it. It was the first time we'd sort of be like, okay, here's our finished thing. You put it together the way you think it should sound, you know? And there was some stuff where, like, no, that's not what we intended. But a lot of it, but there was a lot of, like, pleasant surprises that came from that. You know, where you give somebody, you know, because you kind of start being like, oh, this could have, you know, this effect, or this could be edited this way, and then get some fresh on it, hear it a little differently.
Total eye-opening experience, I would say, actually, where, like, that's so true. We used to be, like, all the mixing and everything happened amongst all of us with DSB, where, yeah, we just spent so much time with it. Sometimes you can get, you know, lost in the forest a little bit, you know?
Right.
And, with Creswell, it's cool, because he's such an artist in his own way as a mixer. And I think that having someone take what you've worked on who hasn't been, like, lost in the weeds with it for all that time.
He
just hears things. He'll hear things that we've totally overlooked because we're all seeing it a certain way. So it really is. It really has been cool working with him.
It's funny with music, because, I mean, it's always like the zooming in and the zooming out. And these days, with so much of it's done on a computer, that it's like, you really use that aspect of it, you know, where you're like, what's going on with this, like, groove? And you're like, oh, okay, things aren't lined up exactly the way maybe they should be. Or maybe you kind of like the way it feels, even though you're looking at it visually, and it's, you know, so it's nice to get out of somebody who's not lost in the weeds with you, you know, and somebody who's not zoomed super close, you know, they're just like looking at it from like, oh, it's just, because in the end, it's just like, happening in people's lives. It's just music in the background, you know, or someone's listening to it really intently, but I don't know that anyone could hear the music the way we do, you know?
Right. Right.
Like, no one could be that, you know, like, mulling over the things where you're like, oh, is that breath sound natural? Or like the other day I was like working on a thing and I wanted it to feel like an old record. So I was like, I'll record vinyl, you know? So then I went and recorded some vinyl off my, you know, like, just the sound of the record sort of scratching, and then I looped that and I made this whole loop of vinyl, but then in the end it didn't sound like vinyl. Even though it was vinyl, my friend was like, what's all that scratching? I was like, well, that's the old record. And he's like, it doesn't sound like that. It's like someone, you know, like rubbing the phone or something.
Wow. I mean, that could go in all kinds of different directions, right?
Yeah.
When you set out to do a set for High Sierra, as an example, or any of the shows, you have to put the genie back in the box, and you're actually going to have to perform these songs now together, not in an isolation booth and not miles away from one another, but actually on stage. Are these songs that you'll rehearse together a few times before you take them out on the road? I mean, what's that process like?
Hopefully, you know, although sometimes you just got to try stuff, you know. What do you think, Lebo? I mean, I think we're getting...
Three of the four tunes that are on the EP, we have been playing them live. And they have been a process where, like, you know, we definitely, like, it's like we made the studio thing, and then we were like, oh, yeah, we're going out on tour, let's play them live. And we definitely, like, had to work some kinks out to figure out, in some cases, how to do it as a quartet and have it feel authentic to our quartet self, you know, but then still represent, you know, what we created artistically on the record. But I kind of think often, I think of them as separate things. Like, right. I like to think of them as separate things, because I feel like, in a way, if you go down the rabbit hole of like, oh, we made this record and now we want to, like, recreate it live for a band like us, a quartet, then I feel like you're almost just going to get lost in like samples and loops and like trying to like recreate this thing. And again, where I feel like ALO, what the thing about ALO that's different than all the other stuff is that it's about the four of us and our relationship. So it's like the music should reflect that too, I think. So I'd always kind of rather lean on like, let's adjust the music to where it needs to be to feel right live. Not let's adjust ourselves too far to, you know what I mean, to try and like what we're going for to try to recreate this thing. And then likewise, the counterbalance to that is I think in the studio, it's like there's no reason you have to just be a live quartet in the studio either. Like, that's fine. It's all over archive.org. You know what I mean? Like it's fun to use the studio as its own instrument too and like do something with that. So I'm cool with them being like separate things, you know?
Yeah, they're very different worlds.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah.
One, it's crazy in the studio because you really get like, you know, you got your like headphones on and you're really like in a pretty like isolated spot, you know? It's not like compared to live where it's just like, you know, there's like beer could get spilled, there's like people and smells, and like studios are almost like doctor's offices sometimes, you know?
Right.
Like they're very different locations, you know?
There's that great Garcia quote, and I'll be paraphrasing, I'm not going to get it right, but it's something like he's talking about. He's like being in the studio is like building a ship inside of a bottle.
Right. Yes.
And being on a stage is like being at a ship in a storm.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Something like that. Or ship at sea. And I totally see that. But like, and one of the big differences, I think, actually, is the notion of real time. And I think that's a thing in music in general, is that like when you're composing, you're not in real time. Like you can work, you can stop, you can slow down, you can speed, you can just like take your time, and you're not in real time. And when you're at a show, you're in real time. Like the thing starts and it's going, you know, so you don't, there's no reflection, you know, which is, I think that's where maybe where that metaphor works so well, because when you're filling a ship in a bottle, you're not in real time. You could take all the time you want. You can rush it. You can go take a break. When you're on stage, you're in the storm. Like the clouds are rolling in, the waves are crashing. You're there.
Yeah, on a kind of related but slightly tangential thing, I was like in the car listening to satellite radio, and Madonna is like hosting her own station right now.
Yeah,
and so they were playing all this live Madonna from different shows around the world, and it was like Material Girl came on, and it was like this kind of like halftime feel, almost like a drum and bass version of Material Girl, and then it went into. I can't remember the name, maybe like Crazy For You, like an older kind of song. And then she like introduced this Basque, this choir from the Basque region, like this men's choir. And they did the song like that with this kind of DJ behind it. And I was like, God, it sounded awesome. I had no idea, but it was like, it made me think like, oh, it's Madonna would probably make everything sound like the studio.
Right.
But then it was a totally different approach, you know?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it was super cool. Yeah.
Well, I guess, too, in her case, she's trying to keep stuff fresh. I mean, those are songs that have been around for forever, right?
I mean, yeah, give them like for a long time, and she's like trying to make them fresh. And then, I mean, she literally said something like, it was my birthday, and these guys were singing on the street, and I loved it so much, I'm bringing them up on stage right now.
There you go.
And they were really good. They got super stony for a second. She just like let them kind of do their Basque region men's choir thing. It was awesome.
There's a way for you guys to collaborate, like just pick up some guys off the street maybe and add them to the set. Creatures Volume 1, Spark, you say you're already working on a second EP. Is it going to be Creatures Volume 2, or is there a different name to it, or how is this all being packaged?
I think it'll be Creatures Volume 2, and then it'll have a different title. This one is the introduction of Spark. We'll see what the next one is, the introduction of.
Cool.
Yeah, and the idea of Spark being the starting point, you know. I was going to make a joke that Volume 1 begs for a Volume 2, of course, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Fire or something.
There was we conceived of it that way, though. We're like, this year, instead of doing, you know, a record of 10 or 12 songs, like let's do a series of EPs. So that's definitely the idea. And I think for us, it's just kind of a fun way to do it too. Kind of like what Zach was saying in the beginning of the conversation, like there's you know, like as things have changed so much with how music gets delivered, it's kind of broken it wide open on just what you can do and how you can do it. And, you know, we feel real fortunate too that we have a record label.
Yeah.
Still, you know, with Brushfire, and they're really kind of supportive of us doing it, how, you know, trying out different things too. So, you know, felt like, well, let's go for that. We never done a series of EPs. We never conceived of it that way. Like, let's give that a roll. It seems like it'd be fun.
I think there could be some really interesting stuff that comes from doing it this way, especially because, like, the last record, which I love, but the last record was different in that we decided to make it fit on, like, some of the other albums had come out on vinyl, but they hadn't come out on vinyl conceptually, like it was sort of retroactively released that way. But Tango Time was the first one that it had to fit on vinyl, which made it so everything had to be 22 minutes per side, basically.
Right.
You know, so it was kind of a pretty strong constraint, you know, for like trying to sequence. You're like, okay, well, which songs are going to be long for a band like us that, like, I mean, every song could be 10 minutes without, you know, if we just let it run. I felt like sounds like this, we kind of like let stuff run. So there's some pretty long tracks on there. But then mm-hmm. Tango Time, we had to really reel it in to make it all fit. And I feel like now we're in sort of a new, like, what will the medium dictate, you know?
I assume that some of these songs are going to stretch out live, right? I mean, that's the hope, is that.
Yeah, they already are. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they already have. It's definitely what happens, you know? I mean, again, that's like another contextual thing that I think a lot of bands in our scene sort of like, it can be a struggle sometimes, is like to what works good on an album versus what works good live. And then also keeping in mind just like what works for your dynamic and the way you work, you know? But yeah, we've totally been stretching them out, and it's been fun. Like, it's been fun seeing where they can go. You know, that's one of the things I think that's most different about recording in our younger age, mm-hmm. when we were first starting, is that everything that went on an album was like something that had been on the road for at least a year, sometimes 5 years, you know, like, so it was all this kind of like, and in a way it was easier, but in a way it was harder too. Cause I think the early albums, they tend to be just, oh, we just went in there and that's the only way we can really conceive of that song, you know? Whereas kind of in this era, it's more like kind of what we were talking about a minute ago, where there's these like two different ways to approach the song. And by doing the studio first, sometimes, you know, you really open it up in that studio process. But then by then going live, you have more constraints, you know what I mean? So you do it as a live band. Whereas when you go the other way, you worked it all out live, then you go to the studio, I think you're more likely to just lay down your live version of it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You guys are a band that, while you tour and certainly do a lot of your own dates, you are a band that plays a lot of festivals, particularly in the summer, like High Sierra, even like your own festival. I mean, you know, let's shout out Camp Deep End.
Yeah.
Shout that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Buy tickets now at ALOmusic.com. Is collaborating with other people that are on the festival still an exciting thing for you guys? I mean, you collaborate all the time, and I know that, you know, you guys hang out, some of you hang out at Crossroads and collaborate there, Terrapin Crossroads, but, you know, is collaborating in a live setting like at a festival something that you like to do as well, aside from, you know, playing your own sets?
Yeah, I love it. I think Yeah, it's one of the great things about a festival that it has to offer, because so much of the time when you're on the road, you know, we're like seeing all our friends in posters, you know,
yeah,
in poster format, because we're all playing the same venues on a different night. And it's like, oh, sometimes you have a funny thing where like you'll spend a week and every night you'll get to the venue and you'll see your friend's poster on the wall that they're playing there one day or 2 days later, and you'll have like just a series of shows in a row where you're like, oh, we're together but apart. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I love about the festivals is that we're there. We're all there together, and so inevitably they're like musical friends. We want to like do stuff together, so there's just like all sorts of collaborations that can.
Yeah, it gets a real like kind of almost like people you only see in the summer, you know, like summer camp vibe or something, where you're like, oh, yeah, you know, the green sky guys, there they are, let's hang, you know.
Right. Thanks for this. Thanks for taking the time, guys. I know you're busy and you got a festival coming up. So thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate it. And we're psyched. We're psyched to hear the rest of this EP, and we're always psyched to hear new ALO music. So thanks for taking the time, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, great to talk to you always.
I have to tell you that these guys are totally genuine in their fun and frivolity. We so dig their musicianship, the songs they make, and their general demeanor. We always keep our ear out for solo work, guest sit-ins, and stuff because we like nice people and hope they succeed. You should definitely check out ALOmusic.com for news, tour dates, including details on Camp Deep End, and much more. Before we leave you, have a listen to another track off of Creatures Volume 1 Spark. Here is Just a Spark.
I saw a light and it shined brightly, like a beacon in the dark. Took my hand and it showed me what can come from just a spark. Like a speck into the twilight, out of nothing we embark. On a path from the sun it's never done. It all starts from just a spark. Whoa, but on its own, it is nothing and it's gone. With the air we breathe, sometimes the fire starts and war rages on. When the rain comes to take, can't wash from my heart. When the rain comes to take you away, you can't wash away the spark.
Been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.